NBC Monitor News on the Hour, brought to you by Time, the weekly news magazine. The more you need to know, the more you need Time. Here's Neil Boggs.
Tension between Greece and Turkey over Cyprus increased today when Turkish Air Force planes reportedly buzzed Greek Cypriot villages. In Washington, the State Department advised against travel to Cyprus by Americans so long as the tense situation continues. Both Greece and Turkey are North Atlantic Treaty allies of the U.S., and American diplomats are working behind the scenes trying to calm their row. The British government tonight responded to the threat of bankruptcy by devaluing the pound and imposing stringent credit restrictions. The first pound devaluation in 18 years lowered the exchange rate in dollars from 280 to 240. Ireland has since followed suit. Denmark also has devalued its currency. But the United States and the world's other big banking nations have announced one by one that their currencies will not be devalued. Clearing weather over North Vietnam enabled American planes to make heavy air strikes today, including raids close to Hanoi and Haiphong. It was a costly action, with at least two of the planes shot down. Their pilots also are reported lost. In the Dak Tho sector of South Vietnam's Central Highlands, American paratroopers battled a North Vietnamese force for 4 hours before the enemy broke off the engagement. Two American soldiers were reported killed, with communist losses unknown. More news after this from Time magazine.
Anatole France once said, "It is well for the heart to be naive, and for the mind not to be." Most people would agree. Yet it is surprisingly easy for even an intelligent, well-educated person to be naive about many of the events of our day. So much happens so quickly. Laws change, art changes, theology changes. Scientific breakthroughs occur with astounding frequency, all of which may help to explain why so many well-educated people turn to Time, the weekly news magazine. Every week, Time devotes some 22 sections to examining the world's week, from the happenings on Capitol Hill to policy decisions in foreign capitals, from new medical discoveries to new methods in education. As long as an item sheds light on some significant aspect of today's world, Time covers it in a manner that stimulates and engages the mind. News of interest to 20 million interested men and women around the world every week in Time.
Once again, here's Neil Boggs. Governor George Romney of Michigan today made his expected entry into the Republican presidential race, the first major figure in either party to declare. His efforts, Romney said, will be to build a nation into one worthy of God's blessing and to lead it out of the Vietnam War. One of the Republicans regarded as a possible Romney challenger has had a challenge made to him. A report from Gene DiCardo, NBC News, San Francisco.
The issue of alleged homosexuality in the administration of California's Governor Reagan was pressed further today by a syndicated columnist. Jack Anderson, a partner of Drew Pearson, who first broke the story, called for a congressional investigation.
When a high public official lies to his people, when a high public official behaves as Reagan has done. Now, he says that we're the liar. I think it's important to find out who is. I think that there ought to be a confrontation. I think that it ought to be an official one, perhaps before a congressional committee, the state legislature or the federal legislature. We'd be delighted to put up the facts that we have, let him the evidence in our possession. Would like him to come in and tell his story.
Anderson declared that if Reagan were just governor, he in person would have dropped the story. But he says the California chief executive wants to be president and is running strong in presidential polls. Gene DiCardo, NBC News, San Francisco.
More in a moment.
If you work in the retail field, do you have a voice in your working conditions? Over 500,000 wage earners do. They're members of the Retail Clerks International Association. They use their legal right to bargain for good wages, good working conditions, and job security, and actually vote on conditions in their union agreement before it is signed. For more information, write to the Retail Clerks International Association, Washington, D.C., 20036.
Britain's chief delegate to the United Nations says enough support has been mustered for Security Council approval of the British compromise plan for a Middle East settlement. Council debate on the proposal is to begin Monday. However, Argentina and Brazil are said to be considering introducing a competing resolution that could drag on the issue. The United Auto Workers Union has set back its strike deadline for 8,000 salaried members at Chrysler Corporation because of the death of UAW President Walter Reuther's father. The new deadline is midnight next Sunday. It had been set for next Tuesday. Scientists at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory are considering putting the Surveyor 6 spacecraft on the moon through another jumping maneuver. And again, the top story, U.S. diplomats try to calm the row between NATO partners Greece and Turkey over Cyprus. Neil Boggs, NBC News, Washington.
Listen again on the hour when the Retail Clerks International Association brings you NBC Monitor News. This is WNBC FM, New York.
This is Fred Collins. Globe-trotting foreign service secretaries are working in 100 embassies around the world, from Afghanistan to Zambia. If you are 21 and single, take shorthand and want to travel, see the Department of State Recruiter, New York State Employment Service, 575 Lexington Avenue, New York, or call 759-1020. That's the New York State Employment Service, 575 Lexington Avenue, New York, or call 759-1020.
Call me any day between 1 and 4 p.m. at Plaza 7, 8866. This is Lee Leonard, and I'll be talking to you.
Don't move, just leave your dollar, Monitor. Here's Monitor. Lean back and stay a while, Monitor. Here's Monitor.
Monitor 67 on November 18th. I'm your Saturday evening host, Ted Steele. Later this half hour, we'll hear the answer to a question some of you may be asking this Thanksgiving. Where are the grannies of yesteryear? Dr. Joyce Brothers will have the answer. And 2 minutes from now, we'll meet the man who wrote the song Peggy Lee is going to sing next. It's Lonesome Road.
Look down, that lonesome road. Before you travel on. Look up, and seek your maker. For Gabriel blows his horn.
Songs written by Gene Austin. He was also one of the singing idols of the 1920s and reportedly sold 160 million records. His recording of My Blue Heaven was his biggest hit, 7 million copies. Monitor reporter Joe O'Grady interviewed him in Florida.
Gene Austin, they say you've sold more records than just about anybody in the history of entertainment. Is this true?
Well, I imagine that's so. I sold more than anybody I know of. And it was back in the time when we were selling a lot of records. At that time, nearly everyone had two phonographs. They had a portable they used to take out in a car and out to the lake and so forth, and they had one at home, and they depended on records for their entertainment. Now you have lots of other forms of entertainment.
Gene, those were the days of Prohibition. Where did you perform? What were some of the clubs?
I didn't work in too many nightclubs around New York. I worked theaters mostly, and I only worked in, about two or three nightclubs. I worked in one for Billy Rose, his first nightclub, his little place, very small place. And we had some pretty fair entertainers there. We had George Raff, he was a Charleston dancer, and Joe Frisco, he was there, and Helen Morgan, that's where she started in New York. And myself, and Al Siegel, he had the band, and it was a pretty fair show. That was one of them. Then I worked another time for Vincent Lopez. He had a big, beautiful place called the Casa Lopez. I worked for him for a while. And then I worked for Lou Clayton, who had the Club Mahjong, so you can tell how long ago that's been. And that's where I sent him over to see Jimmy Durante. Jimmy was with a night called Harrison Jackson Durante over at the Everglades. And I sent him over there to see him. And, they didn't do any business then, but later on, he teamed up with, they brought out Harrison, I guess, and they teamed up with Jackson and Durante, and they became a very famous nightclub act.
Gene, you're always associated with My Blue Heaven, naturally, a song you didn't write. But of all the songs you did write, which one is your favorite?
Well, it's hard to tell because songs are like, it's like eating, you know, or like moods, you know. Sometimes you want to eat one thing, certain time of day, and sometimes you want to hear something else. But sometimes you write a song that isn't particularly a big hit, but there's something about it you like. I think one of the best songs I've ever written wasn't one of the biggest hits. I wrote it for Roberta Sherwood, and it kind of helped her get started. Walter Winchell picked it up. He liked it very much, and it's one of his favorite songs, and it kind of got them together. I wrote a song called Take Your Shoes Off, Baby, and Start Running Through My Mind. That's a kind of a musician thing. Of course, I wrote Lonesome Low. That's the biggest thing in the world. It's played and sung, was performed more than any other song. Anytime you go in Vegas or any place at all, every group you see sings Lonesome Road, they all sing differently.
Gene, we always hear a lot about in clubs that the most requested song of people when they're feeling sentimental is Cry Melancholy Baby. You know the routine. Who are more sentimental, men or women?
Well, I'll tell you now that men are much more sentimental. I learned this working at the Club Mahjong because we had all the gamblers and the bootleggers and you know, crap shooters, and they used to have a roving crap game years ago around New York, and Lou was quite a crap shooter himself. And once in a while, we'd have it in the Club Mahjong. I'd see Mick the Greek, Titanic Thompson, and all these guys, you know, Arnold Rothstein, those high rollers.
These are all the big gamblers of the Roaring Twenties.
That's right. And I've actually had a guy give me $1,000 bill to sing Melancholy Baby. So I used to think that women were sentimental, but after that, I decided men were the sentimental ones.
Gene, it's been most enjoyable reminiscing with you about the good old days and your fantastic career. And as one fan I overheard recently said after a show, still the same Gene Austin. Joe O'Grady, NBC Monitor.
And there they go down that lonesome road. Here's a song that's popular today, and in spirit, it's not unlike Lonesome Road. By the time I get to Phoenix, Glenn Campbell sings it.
By the time I get to Phoenix, she'll be right there. She'll find the note I left hanging on her door. She'll laugh when she reads the part that says I'm leaving. 'Cause I've left that girl so long.
chocolate munch and give me a call. She'll just hear that phone keep on ringing off the wall. That's all.
Ever going to make it to Phoenix, but I do know that you're on the Bonneter Beacon.
You live in freedom and security, and Freedom Shares help to keep our country free. So follow the eagle, the red, white, and blue eagle. Buy a share in Freedom, U.S. Savings Bond.
Tomorrow afternoon on Monitor, you'll find out about the Thanksgiving turkey and why it's the traditional festive meal for that day. You'll also hear Miss Teenage America talk about young people and demonstrations. And host Henry Morgan interviews Joe David Brown, the author of a book about hippies. Actress Thelma Ritter will be a guest, and there'll be Monitor sports, music, news features, and a weather prediction from a man who can tell just how cold the winter will be by how much fat is on the bear. Frankly, I'd rather take my chances with the weather than the bear. All that tomorrow with Henry Morgan on Monitor. In all the time. All About People is the title of Monitor series by Dr. Joyce Brothers, and grandparents are people. So here is Dr. Brothers to talk about them.
Thanksgiving hasn't changed. It's still to grandparents' house we go. But the grandparents have changed. Grandma looks more like a swinger than Whistler's mother, and Grandpa's given up swinging on the old porch swing in favor of swinging a tennis racket or a golf club. There isn't a rocking chair in sight. Does this mean grandparents are younger than they used to be? Yes and no. They're not younger in calendar years. They are younger physically and mentally, thanks to affluence, their nutrition, and medical progress. The change has brought a change in in-law problems, marriage counselors report. Young married women used to complain that their mothers-in-law criticized their cooking and housekeeping. Now they criticize the daughter-in-law's grooming and gloat when they're mistaken for the wife instead of the mother. Young men face similar competition. Fathers and fathers-in-law, they charge, are less interested in giving them advice than in beating them on the handball court. Once, sharing a home and a slender income with aging parents disrupted families and caused Harris couples to seek professional help. They're still seeking it, but the financial reasons have changed. Now it's because the parents are supporting them. This can be just as disruptive to the family, warns child psychologist Ida Lushan, though it needn't be. Some parents offer financial aid to their children with no strings attached. They can afford it. And today, young people need it if they're going to get the education necessary for top careers and not forego having families to do it. But some parents use footing the bills as a foot in the door. They not only pay for the house, they select it. When the grandchildren come along, they take them to the pediatrician, enroll them in the nursery school of their choice, and drive them back and forth to summer camp. Because they feel as young as they did when they were parents, they try to repeat their experience as parents. The real parents fight for the parental rights. A power struggle results, and the grandchildren pay the price. Children don't need the confusion of two sets of parents, Dr. Lushan reminds. They do need what grandparents have always had to offer. Once it was called spoiling the grandchildren rotten, and Dr. Lushan calls it unconditional love. Children need it. It gives them a faith in themselves that nothing else can duplicate. Dr. Lushan hopes it won't be thrown out with the rocking chair and grandfather's cane. This is Dr. Joyce Brothers for Monitor.
Paul Moriat and the orchestra and Love in Every Room. Very interesting. In Santa Barbara, California, we're heard on KTMS. This is Ted Steele for Monitor.
Hi, everybody. This is Chris Economaki, inviting you to join me again tomorrow on Monitor for more spills and chills in the sport of speed.
Ted Steele here with Monitor 67, and we'll find out what's going on in the world of space after Jack Jones sings Live for Life.
Come with me, my love, and seize the day and live it fully, live it fast. Never thinking once about tomorrow till tomorrow's been and gone and past. We'll pour the wine and fill the cup of joy and drink as if it were the last. Live, just live for life. In Paris today, in Amsterdam tomorrow, 60 minutes through the sky. Fly with me and see the setting summer sun and stay with me to see it rise. And say to those who say to live this way is mad, and mad we'd rather be than wise. Live, just live for life. If you let me, I will lead you through the mystery and wonder of a world you've never known before. Share the kindness to be shared, magic places to explore, dare the dangers to be dared. Life is all of this and more, this and more. Yesterday's a memory gone for good forever, and tomorrow is a guess. What is real is what is here and now, the here and now is all that we possess. So take my hand and we will take the moment, if for just the moment's happiness. Live, just live for life. Come with me to where the hills are green and still and filled with flowers to adore. Come with me to where the laughter rings and crowds are pounding sound of guns of war. Yes, come with me, my love, and live for life, and life will live for you forevermore. Live, just live for life. Live, just live for life.
Space is having a great influence on the world of Earth. It's changed our lives, of course, even in little ways. Peter Hackis, NBC News, Washington, reports.
How long has it been since someone asked you if apples cost 5 cents and Tommy has a quarter, how many apples can he buy? Well, the gang in first grade these days thinks any teacher who uses only this kind of arithmetic is strictly a square. Nowadays, it's this kind of problem. To keep fit, Colonel John Glenn ran 5 miles a day. How many miles did he run in 3 days? Well, that's a question for youngsters in the early elementary grades from a booklet supplied to teachers by the U.S. Office of Education. It's the only children's arithmetic book I know that teaches them to count backwards. They learn their numbers by filling in the missing ones in an imaginary countdown. For third grade children, the text explains that on the moon, things weigh only 1/6 of their normal weight here on Earth. So one of the questions is, if Jane weighs 42 pounds, how much will she weigh on the moon? One section of the booklet teaches children to tell time. There are the usual blank clock faces on which the youngsters are to draw the hour hand and the minute hand. But the pupils are asked to illustrate 2:20 a.m. That's the time Colonel Glenn was awakened before his flight. 6:06 a.m., the time he entered the capsule. And 9:47 a.m., the time he went into space aboard Friendship 7. It's fun for the children, the teachers report. It keeps them in tune with what grown-ups are talking about and gives them the groundwork to understand what they hear on radio and television and read in the newspapers. Often it's easier for the children to catch up on space than it is for the teachers, they say. Apparently they have less to unlearn. All over the country, teachers are attending lectures and reading up on space matters to make their teaching more interesting. Last summer, for example, 11,000 teachers attended workshops on space. It's a must, because youngsters these days, even very young youngsters, are studying the moon, the planets, astronaut activities, boosters, satellites, and the rest. To further help the teachers and textbook writers, NASA is producing a 600-word space dictionary for elementary schools. Oregon State University is doing the research, working out understandable definitions of such terms as orbital decay and reentry blackout. NASA says the dictionary is about to be tested in the classroom and will be issued in time for school next fall. And this is one NASA program, I'm told, that won't slip. Unlike some other space projects, this one is A-OK, right on schedule. Peter Hackus, NBC News, Washington.
Streisand making My Favorite Things sound like Melancholy Baby. At 16 minutes before the hour, you're on the Monitor Beacon.
The Conversation Station, WNBC, New York. Hey, you know, it's getting chilly, and with all the talk about which heat is cheapest, the click of the old thermostat sounds like money. Now, what if I told you you can save on heat from the outside of your house? Well, you can. A snug, tight house can't leak heat. And today, there's a power-sprayed exterior finish that actually reseals a house as well as expensive siding. It's Delco's Renew-It, the professional exterior the professionals apply to your house. Delco will estimate, help you select from 14 decorator colors, come back, spray renew it, and recaulk doors and windows. Ask to see Delco's written guarantee of at least 15% fuel savings in 1 year, and also renew it guarantees product reliability for 10 years against peeling, chipping, and cracking, or will furnish material replacement. You pay nothing until January 15th. Renew it eliminates repainting and residing. Last 20, 30 years. 100,000 happy homeowners can't be wrong. So next time the thermostat clicks, do it. Call Renew It. AX70188. In Jersey, 333-4646. Outside the area, call Collect. AX70188. Remember, winter's just about with us.
Had you snapped my fingers, then I could have anything I want. Sometimes I look out my window, see lovers passing and walk by. They moved the diamonds I went, but not the tears of envy in my eyes.
Millionaire. In fact, a multimillionaire. And I guess since she's a woman, I should say multimillionaireess. Why don't I just say her name, huh? Marjorie Hurst. Her autobiography, No Glass Slipper, has just been published. In it, she tells how she was deserted by her husband and left with a small baby to raise. She borrowed $200 and started what has turned into the world's largest secretarial bureau with 60 branches on three continents. Monitor's Candy Jones visited this lady tycoon.
Working in a man's world has brought Marjorie Hurst challenges and, of course, has developed the logical side of her nature, so she claims. But for pleasure and relaxation, she admits to returning to the woman's world happily, adding, "For this is where I belong." Marjorie Hurst, you are a remarkable Englishwoman, unique indeed as a person because, well, most people are not self-made millionaires, and even fewer self-made millionaires are women. What motivated you to become a millionaire?
My husband deserted me when my baby was 3 weeks old, and I had to earn a living.
How old were you then?
I must have been about 34, I think.
Well, why did you choose a secretarial type of service, a clerical service, rather than, let's say, cosmetics or homemaking or, you know, some of the other things women go in for?
Well, my brother-in-law, when I went to him for advice, when I suggested I should go in for coats and dresses and things like that because he was a manufacturer, and I said I had just a little money, and would he sort of help me? And he said he would do that willingly, but first of all, I would have to go and be a shop assistant and learn the trade. And I said, "But that's ridiculous. I've got to earn a living now. I have a baby." And he said, well, then do something that you can do. And I said, well, the only thing I can do is type. He said, then type. So I typed.
Well, and you started typing.
I didn't have, I must be fair, I had a little. Father assigned an overdraft for me for £50, which
that's
is about $130,
yes.
That's what it was.
You had a little money. Why do you suppose, Marjorie Hurst, there are so few women who are self-made millionaires?
Only because the opportunity hasn't arisen. You have to have a driving force. You have to have a reason for wanting to make money. Most women don't really want to make money. They want to make a living, and they want to find a good husband. They want to produce children, which is only right that they should. It fulfills them. Life without it is a very sad thing. And they don't have the opportunity or the reason for forcing themselves to do the things that I had to do. I worked 20 hours a day. What else could I do with my life? I had no husband. Boyfriends at that time didn't interest me because my heart was broken. I had a baby. I wanted her to look beautiful. I wanted her to have everything in life. And so I worked.
Marjorie Hurst, what was the best part of being poor, and what is the worst part of being a multimillionaireess?
That's a wonderful question. I'm going to try very hard to answer it. The best part of being poor was the challenge to make something of myself, obviously. During the time that I first started in my business, although I was sad at times, the excitement of going up, of accomplishing things, was really quite fabulous. I've never had that excitement since. Now, the worst part of being rich is that you are sometimes very lonely.
Why are you lonely?
Well, first of all, I have a very large position in my company, as I explained in my book. I'm chairman of the company.
How many people do you employ, Marjorie?
I employ over 7,000 people, and I have branches throughout the world, including 8 in Australia. Now, I have to travel around the world 8 times a year. And anyone who's had to sit in a hotel bedroom at night after 7 o'clock will know what I mean. Let me tell you something. I went to Australia last time and stopped off at Honolulu. I had two people to be introduced to, two charming families. They were both away. I arrived at 6 o'clock in the evening. I went down. I had a solitary dinner. I came back. I went to bed and fell asleep. I didn't have to go till 12 o'clock the next night. Most beautiful day. Everybody was on the beach. I was dying to go on the beach. I couldn't go on the beach on my own. I was shy. And I went to the flicks. I went to the pictures and saw a lovely film. And if that isn't loneliness, then what is?
When you're playing the role of Marjorie Hurst, lady multimillionaireess, but not at the moment businesswoman, what do you enjoy doing?
I like, over the weekend, having my women friends over. I love going right into a woman's world. I like to discuss the servant problem. I like to discuss the children. I like to discuss dresses, clothes, even vacations, even if I don't go on them. I like all the little things, all the lovely little fun things that women can discuss among themselves.
You know, to some businesswomen, the phrase, you think like a man, is accepted as a compliment. What's your reaction to women who take on a man's job and become masculine in their overall attitudes?
I think it's a great tragedy for them. I think that they miss a tremendous amount out of life. You know, women are very peculiar creatures. They want to live a very full life. They want to go into a man's world, but they want also to be dominated by a man. Now, it's quite easy to do this if you are married and you have two worlds. You go into your man's world, you do your job, you have to tell people what to do, and then you come home and you flutter your eyelids and you let your husband take over. Wonderful.
We've been speaking with a self-made millionaireess, Marjorie Hurst, head of the world's largest secretarial bureau and author of the new book, No Glass Slipper. This is Candy Jones for Monitor.
Well, now Marjorie Hurst can buy her own glass slipper if she likes. Here's John Gary, a song called Cold.
Cold are the winds of December. Cold as the love I remember. Cold as the moon I said.
Thanksgiving includes a meatless turkey. It's a meat substitute made of a soybean derivative. The manufacturer claims it has more protein and less cholesterol than the real thing and is cheaper. It's packaged in loaves and comes complete with a plastic wishbone. A plastic wishbone, that's okay, but only for plastic wishes, huh? Generation and Birds of Britain. NBC News on the Hour is next, and then I'll be back with more of Monitor. I'm your host, Ted Steele.
Keep to the latest news now. It's on the air. Keep tuned for sports and views now from everywhere. From everywhere.